I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
After the checkered flag.
What do you think of my t-shirt?
I mean, I preferred it when you had your jacket on. Because actually displaying the whole design of it, I was happy to just see a slither of Mike. Can I call him Mike?
No. Ladies and gentlemen, today I'm wearing a Michael Schumacher t-shirt. One of the 400 that I own. It's actually a new purchase.
Is it from Thailand?
It looks like it. It came up on my Instagram feed the other day and I went, yep.
Oh, those Instagram ads are working a treat.
Literally. Some t-shirt company out there. I actually don't even know the name of it. I'm really sorry. I should be shouting them out. Well, actually, I shouldn't. Well,
Paid
a lot of money.
If you did get Sam's order and you can backtrack through the emails, then please get in touch because I would happily wear.
They've got a Carlos Sainz one with. They've got a Sebastian Vettel one.
Yeah. Probably wouldn't wear. I'd wear a Sainz one just because I think he's a cool guy.
A cool guy. Not sometimes.
So then do they only do Ferrari drivers?
No. Hold on a second. I'm going to find out who it is. Because I should shout them out. Like it's a cool t-shirt, I guess. But yeah, new perch. And I thought, considering we're recording after Checkered Flag today, I might as well wear some merch, as you often do. You're actually not wearing any F1 merch, so we've swapped roles.
I've gone super casual today.
Can you help me out? What does it say on my tag?
Greasy Tees? Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
G-R-E-A.
Greasy Tees. Come on, Greasy Tees. What else do you offer?
It's weird that... I mean, I actually don't mind the colour combination because you've kind of got this light pale khaki, which is obviously on trend at the moment with bright red, really old school artwork with Michael's face on it.
So yeah, they do a Sebastian Vettel t-shirt. They do a Carlos Sainz. Oh, well, they do a Charles Leclerc t-shirt. Yeah,
so all the Ferrari drivers. It's fairly niche.
Fairly niche.
And also right up my street. Reliant on them doing quite well.
Supposedly. But anyway, yes, there we go. Merched up. Greasy Tees if you want to get yourself this very cool Michael Schumacher t-shirt. Anyway, welcome to the latest episode of After Checkered Flag. If you're listening to us and you're thinking, hey, where can I watch these episodes and where can I see this fantastic t-shirt? Well, head over to recast.tv/behindtheglass because these days, the video version of After Checkered Flag sits exclusively on our Recast page, so you can go and check that out. But yeah, we're in this kind of weird limbo, right? This non-summer break.
A rather depressing time, considering we've geared ourselves up for the season, we've had three races, and all of a sudden now there's just... It's very flat. There's very little information and news out there because it's too early on in the season to get driver changes or anything exciting happening. The one thing that I am excited about, and I'm sure we'll get into it in this episode, is it's not a summer break because all of the teams can work as usual. So yeah. They can kind of crack on with developments.
Usually we get this... during a season, to have this much time off from actual racing is usually in the summer when everything shuts down. You get the summer break and then come
back.
It's
very Italian, isn't it?
With all the work in the summer. You can understand why Ferrari get involved with the rulemaking. But yeah, because the Chinese Grand Prix was abandoned once again or cancelled, we've ended up with this kind of month-long break between the last Grand Prix and Baku, which is the next one. So yeah, we're sitting around kind of twiddling our thumbs going, come on, let's get back to it.
Scouring Instagram
for F1 news. But you're right, the teams are probably behind the scenes working harder than ever because they've got this huge chunk of time to take the learnings, I guess, from the first three races and start to apply or modify the changes that they were planning to make.
Mm.
So the question is, do we think by the time we finally get to Baku, we might see a bit of a change? It's a bit like previously, it was always the start of the European season, Barcelona Grand Prix, that things would change slightly or there'd be some upgrades. With all of this time off, do we think one team is going to kind of move forward or?
I mean, firstly, Baku is one of the greatest races. So to then usually, we thought that about Saudi Arabia. But like the excitement levels are starting to build. I would be slightly concerned if there wasn't a change or a shift or even a closing of the gap between some of the teams in this break. Because, I mean, we always expect these top teams, Ferrari, Mercedes, to really push Red Bull down the road and try and catch up and close that gap. And we haven't really seen that over between the end of last season and the beginning of this season, which we're all kind of as fans scratching our head to be like, well, we kind of want that fight for the Drivers' Championship, the World Championship, Constructors' Championship. So, yes, in theory, but that's kind of what we had hoped and expected at the beginning of the season. Whether that has given everyone a kick up the backside to be like, all right, we really have to figure out our car for Baku, you hope.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think necessarily kick up the backside. I mean, hopefully they would have turned up to the first race and gone, we're not winning, let's work harder. Yeah. I don't think they would have gone, oh, we've got some time off, yeah, let's see if we can do some work now.
Look at Mercedes. They had from the end of November, beginning of December, all the way up until March, and they literally stood firm with, yeah, we'll keep the same design, we'll keep the same concept, and let's see whether it works. That's not really the attitude to have if they really are serious about giving Lewis that final eighth world championship.
Well, what about the story that has come out saying that Lewis was actually pushing really hard at the end of last year to go into a different technical direction and supposedly even came with ideas? Like, wasn't saying, guys, we need to change it up. He was like, guys, I think we should change the angle of, like, apparently it was a legitimate.
So he came with a PowerPoint.
Apparently.
Did he come with a laptop to the Mercedes HQ?
I would love to have seen it.
So would I, with his little glasses on.
Maybe Angela bought it before they broke up. But yeah, apparently Toto and the rest of the team went, no, Lewis.
Yeah.
No, you drive, we build. And stuck with that direction. And now they've all gone, oh, maybe Lewis had a point.
Yeah.
He is a champion. So yeah, I mean, look, I get what you're hinting at. I think my hope is that if you look at those first three races, because it's always tough at the start of the year, it's always a bit of teething issues. We always take a while for things to settle down and for the real true form to come to the forefront. I think we can probably stand firm on the fact that no one's really going to catch Red Bull for the championship. I think we will get some more competitive races.
At Baku, or do you think the whole championship's already out?
The whole year.
Back to your pessimistic ways.
Yeah, because it's not pessimism. I think it's realistic ways, realism.
No, you've got to be a glass half full guy in F1.
My glass is not even a tenth full. Because, yeah, I mean, it's too much of an advantage that in this time off with cost cap and all these different things, that suddenly we're going to get to Baku and Mercedes, Ferrari or Aston Martin are going to be on a level pegging. I don't see it. Hey, I would love it if we're surprised.
You're surprised.
Yeah.
don't tarnish me with the same brush.
But I think what we might do is get things settling down, because if we look at the first three races, what could we agree the order was? Red Bull.
Yeah.
Mercedes. I'm talking about race pace.
Yeah. Mercedes and Aston were kind of over the three races. You'd probably put them as equal.
Yeah, okay, fair. So, yeah, Red Bull, Mercedes and Aston, fairly equal in second.
Ferrari,
third, kind of level pegging with Alpine. Alpine started to get their act together, didn't they?
Yeah, in Australia.
In Australia.
Yeah.
But they had a slightly stronger... it's a Monday
Saudi?
Morning. Yes, thank you.
only had Bahrain, Saudi, Australia.
Thank you for the help. that's dad life for you. Losing brain cells by the minute. But yeah, so I think Alpine are there or thereabouts. And then after that, it just seems a mishmash between the AlphaTauris, the Williams, the McLaren, God, freaking Hopsel. So, you know, I think that front running team might settle, and maybe Mercedes or Aston will stretch above the other?
I would say or predict that Mercedes and Ferrari, I can imagine, would leapfrog Aston Martin eventually. Mm-hmm. If you look at the team, the personnel, the strategy, Mercedes have a constructors winning championship team and strategists there to really drive that car forward, especially with Lewis and George helping the development. And you'd like to think that Ferrari have little sort of gems in their Italian factory. I'm hoping to, as much as you are. But I just feel like Aston Martin have kind of, I can imagine, stumbled across this performance.
No, I don't think that's fair.
No. Like, I genuinely think that they're a little bit surprised themselves. The way that they're posting on social media, the way that their sort of success has come, that have they got the personnel and the ability to drive that forward and keep up with Mercedes and Ferrari? We've never seen it. So I'm just guessing and predicting, but I just don't think that they're going to be able to match the pace of rate of development as Mercedes and Ferrari.
Okay, I really disagree. I think, yes, I don't think maybe Aston Martin expected to leap so high up the grid. You know, I think they were hopeful of being the third or fourth most competitive team, and they've really ended up as the second. But history has shown us that Force India, Racing Point, teams or that team in a different guise can remain competitive throughout a year. And we have seen them forever being the competitive underdog and being there or thereabouts. Okay, fine. Arguably, they haven't been quite this competitive in their history, I don't think, as that team. Viewers, feel free to correct me on that if you can, mark a year where they've, that team under whatever name has been more competitive. But yeah, it is the big question though, isn't it? Mm. Can they keep up?
Yeah.
Are under pressure in a genuine podium and maybe even race winning contention if Red Bull falter, are they there? Have they got the team? And I think, yes, I think that's what Stroll has been absolutely working his butt off for over the last few years. And all of his big chav, whatever I do, I win. Like, he's just gone and
Lawrence,
hired the best.
You're talking about Lawrence.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought you said Lance. And I was like, I think you're getting the wrong. Stroll's mixed up.
Yeah, no, Lawrence. And he's just gone and hired the best people who do know how to go and win. So, yeah, I don't want to do the whole, they fluked into this position like, oh, isn't it cute seeing Aston Martin in the front? Like, it'll be fun while it lasts. Like, I'm hoping it's real deal legit.
You hope they're there to stay.
Yeah, and with the mess that Ferrari are in at the moment, and arguably the mess that Mercedes are in, let's not forget, Mercedes didn't know why they were so competitive in Australia.
Yeah.
Just like last year, they were like, oh, yeah, like, it's good that we're fast.
So in a way, it's the Mercedes and Ferrari almost not being able to understand their car and performance that has meant Aston Martin have leapfrogged.
No, I just think Aston Martin do a better job.
Okay.
I think Aston Martin understand their car, know how to turn it on, and know how to get the maximum pace out of it. Is there more pace to come from the Aston? I don't know.
Mm.
The Mercedes and the Ferrari, I think there's more pace to come.
Well, from those two teams, we've heard of upgrades that are coming in Baku that could potentially accelerate them up even further.
For sure. So, you know, I think you can see that there's things not quite right with those cars, and that when they really turn it on and hit the sweet spot, as Mercedes did in qualifying in Australia, you're like, okay, they've got a competitive package, but they didn't know how they got there. Well, Aston Martin turn out the track, they're very chill, this is our package, boom, it's really fast.
Yeah.
So let's see. It's going to be fascinating, but there is a chance, let's not get too excited, that we'll get to Baku and things might look a little bit different. After the checkered flag. Now, weirdly, in this off season, we've had various blasts from the past.
Names getting swept back up.
Yeah.
Under the rug. Is that even a phrase?
That's what you were trying to do.
Yeah. That worked, but it's almost like the rug got lifted up and a few names have popped themselves back out.
Well, because there's not a lot racing, they're like, hey guys.
Yeah.
Whilst it's quiet in F1, remember me? I guess we've got to kick off with the bizarre story that came out that Felipe Massa,
oh my God,
was looking into whether there's any legal way to essentially get him the 2008 Formula One World Championship, because it came out that Bernie Ecclestone and Formula One knew about the Crashgate scandal that was Nelson Piquet being told to purposefully crash in Singapore to designate so that Fernando Alonso could win the race due to a safety car strategy. And there's the thought that, oh, well, then they should be disqualified or disqualified from the championship. Well, I don't know what it is, but this to me really stunk of desperation.
I mean, it stunk of a lot of things, but it definitely, firstly, came out of the blue. Secondly, he must have had someone in his ear going, we found a loophole.
G-ing him up.
Yeah.
Because you know what this means?
It's not like he's had a legal representative come out and make a statement. Like, he himself has tried to win back a world championship from 15 years ago as if they're going to overturn it. There was more chance of it getting overturned in 2021 with Lewis and Max.
Literally, this is what's so bizarre. Is like, if this was even a thing, think of all the championships around the world in various different sports that people would be like, well, hold on a second. I mean,
if you let that one slide, how many more are you going to let slide?
Exactly that. And you're right, with the uproar that was around the 2021 season finishing, to then be revisiting a race that wasn't even the title decider. There were so many races that year that were fundamentally title deciders and swayed that championship. Oh, the whole thing kind of annoyed me, because I think Massa had retired quite elegantly. You know, he'd become an elder statesman of the sport.
Oh, like he's popped onto all sorts of different grids. I was in Saudi Arabia and he came on and did a talk with Johnny Herbert as well. And he was this really sort of like cool, calm, collected, very suave,
respectful
ex-Formula One driver. And now he's come out and almost tarnished his brand a little bit, because every time he gets back into the F1 paddock, everyone's going to look at him at a different angle now.
Yeah, and ask him, oh, what's going on with
Yeah.
Like, let it go, man.
It seems quite bitter and very unexpected from his character that he portrays to the television and global F1 fan base.
And it's not like ever since that race
he's been bringing it up.
Yeah, guys, come on. Like, if he'd been flying the flag for 15 years, then that should have been my championship, and he'd always been bitter about it, and he'd never forgiven Timo Glock or never hugged Lewis. And said all of these things, you'd be like, I get it. The guy just can't let it go.
He did an interview with Timo Glock.
Yeah.
At Brazil.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
And Lewis, you're the best. You're the best. Like, I lost to the best. Like, and now he's like, actually, you're not the best. I should have won. It's real. I mean, it was just bizarre. So I think you're right. I think they're on a drunken night out somewhere and someone's gone.
Probably in Brazil.
That's stereotypical.
Or Monaco.
I think Monaco. And someone's got in his ear and been like, bro, come on, man. That championship should have been yours.
I actually saw, going off topic, but thinking about Monaco, I actually saw, did you see this? A LaFerrari parked outside the Japanese restaurant that had Charles Leclerc, number 16, all over it. And everyone was kind of speculating that that was his car. I reckon it was just a fan's car. But hasn't Massa got a black Ferrari? LaFerrari with all of the red details. And Alonso has as well.
So Massa did. I think Massa sold his.
To Alonso?
Well, so there is quite a, well, basically, yeah, the black with red pinstriping seems to have been either a very popular spec for the LaFerrari, or I'm wondering if that was a Ferrari driver thing.
No,
because Alonso and Massa would have been teammates at a similar time for 24 when the LaFerrari at least was being, if you were specking a LaFerrari, would they have still been there? When did Alonso leave Ferrari? Did
he
leave
before that?
The LaF was 2012.
So
he was at Ferrari. So either Massa sold his LaFerrari to Alonso or because there's somebody else that's been spied in that spec that is Ferrari associated.
Because there's definitely one in the UK about 10 minutes away from where I live at the new Ferrari dealership.
With identical spec.
Yeah.
So yeah. So, but to go back to your original point, there was this
fan.
Well,
fan
if it was
spec?
Charles Leclerc's car. Wow, the car's got an ego. So yeah, it was a LaFerrari, which had not only his numbers, his racing number 16 on the sort of side flanks, but also like sponsor logos, like the Santander logo. Like, that's him like really committing, like, I love me as Ferrari Formula One.
So when I'm not in an F1 car, I want to be driving at the closest thing.
Yeah, and make sure everyone knows that it's me.
I mean, he doesn't really hide himself in Monaco in that pista anyway.
No.
Roof down every day.
Just cruising in a uniquely special Pista. Yeah, that was bizarre, but not as bizarre as Massa trying to reclaim his champion, his lost championship. But speaking of Ferrari and weird stories, Danny Kvyat.
Oh, here we go.
Good old Danny Kvyat.
Torpedo.
The torpedo. In case you're newer to F1, Danny Kvyat was a part of the Red Bull program quite a few years ago now. Very successful at Toro Rosso. Got moved up to Red Bull when Vettel left. And it was the start of that kind of renowned second seat, or that sort of quick replacing at Red Bull with what appeared to be Helmut Marko just chopping and changing drivers as he liked, because he thought they weren't performing.
Second seat.
Yeah, so that exactly that. You know, to that point, they hadn't changed drivers as quickly as they did over the following years. But yeah, they brought Kvyat in, and then he got absolutely ousted for Verstappen. He got demoted back to Toro Rosso, ousted for Verstappen, and then Verstappen got rid of Ricciardo, and then obviously since then we've just had a chop and change of Gasly's and Pierre and Albon's and everyone. Anyway, Kvyat came out and said that in 2016, so prior, or was that at the start of his second year, just before he got booted out, when he was at Red Bull, Ferrari came knocking at his door and said they wanted him to replace Raikkonen.
That's crazy.
And he said, no, I'm good, I'm going to stick it at Red Bull. And then 6 months later, he was kicked out of Red Bull and demoted to Toro Rosso, and his Formula One career basically ended.
I mean, firstly, it's obvious that Ferrari have been panicking for a driver for quite some time if they were looking around Danny Kvyat. But also, do you know what excites me about this story? Is whilst now F1 is at its absolute peak in terms of media attention, how much the fan base love the sport with Drive to Survive and our podcast, is what stories are going to come out from this current grid in 10 years' time?
You always say this.
Yeah, yeah, because I want to see the movies about all of the stuff, and maybe Drive to Survive is kind of giving us that little bit of what goes on behind the race. But I would love to see, is it a biopic?
Yeah.
Of Lewis's career, because I think there's just so much that we have no idea about. If Danny Kvyat's coming out and saying that Ferrari approached him, think about the stuff that goes on that no one is aware of or has access to.
Well, there's a handful of, this is for me, it always fascinates me. I think firstly, it comes out quite a lot that Ferrari seem to approach quite a lot of drivers. It's like a regular thing for them, where I think they always want to be on the forefront of being able to pick whichever drivers they want to pick.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And they seem to always be sussing out. We've always had the stories of, Kubica and his kind of pre-signed contract. Mark Webber, I think, back in the day, also had the option or was potentially going to go to Ferrari to end his career. You've always heard these things. I think, was it DC at one point was up for Ferrari? Anyway, I can't remember. But yeah, lots and lots of drivers seem to have conversations with Ferrari. But you're right. you know, looking at a Lewis Hamilton or even an Alonso or whatever it might be and finding out about the moves they could have made. And I remember definitely chats of Lewis going to Red Bull at times. I remember like F1 racing magazines, I'm sure, did a cover of him like mocked up in a Red Bull suit.
Yeah.
But also there was definitely a big Ferrari yep. chat at one point, yep. wasn't there? And you could have said the same for Vettel. And when they've made these big moves, drivers, especially Lewis from McLaren to Mercedes, you always kind of want to know like what else was on the table, what else was being discussed.
Yeah.
We know with Daniel Ricciardo, the whole Renault and McLaren thing, and went to Renault, then went back to McLaren. And it is fascinating. And every now and again, you get these stories, mainly on F1's podcast, Beyond the Checkered Flag. That's right. Is that what it's called?
Beyond the Grid.
Thank you. We're God, this is confusing. I'm with you. I find it fascinating. And to finish off this section, one other name that came out of the past. Do you remember Jaime Alguersuari?
Jesus.
Is that a bit too rogue a reference
that
for
is,
you?
Yeah.
So he again was a Toro Rosso driver. He's now become a really successful DJ, disc jockey.
Oh,
and he was teammates. Yeah, probably. He was teammates with Sebastian Buemi.
Oh, yeah.
And at the time,
Formula E went to Formula E, right?
Amongst many things, including WEC.
Yeah.
But they were really the hot up and comers. It was when Red Bull was starting to perform really well. Toro Rosso weren't bad. And Buemi especially, but also Jean-Eric Vergne. And then Alguersuari somewhat, but Vergne and Buemi, it was like, these two guys seem super hot. Like these two guys have a lot of potential, especially Buemi, but there's no space. There's nowhere for them to go. And Red Bull basically won't let them go to another team. So ended their careers essentially. And it kind of came out at the time that Helmut Marko basically turned around and said, look, you guys aren't winners. So adios, mate. And Buemi, look at his stats.
I was going to say, yeah, it's almost doing him a disservice to just say, oh, he went to Formula E. He's done loads.
He's won everything.
Yeah.
And this is so Alguersuari, because I think he either won or he was on pole for the Portimao 6 hours just this weekend.
Yeah. I reckon if you showed me his name, I can't work out the jumble of letters.
Jaime Alguersuari.
Yeah. I don't know how you'd spell that, but I think if you showed me his name,
if I showed you his
it would be familiar.
You'd see him if I showed you his. Because he was very young. He was one of the very young drivers, that guy.
Yes. Yeah.
Alguersuari. But Buemi, so just to reel this up. Because this was Alguersuari's point. He's like, you know, just FYI, 11 years ago, we were told we were not winners and we weren't going anywhere and ended our careers. And like, I'm not talking about myself, but just my teammate, Buemi, went on. So FIA World Endurance Championship, he's been racing in since 2012. He's won the championship 3 times, 2014, 2018, and 2022. He's had 22 wins, 10 poles, 11 fastest laps. In Formula E, he's been racing since 2014. He's won the championship once. He's won 13 E-Prix, 29 podiums, 15 poles. And then in the 24 Hours of Le Mans, he won it in 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2022.
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, I've definitely been there when he's won Le Mans.
He is a machine. The thing is, it's impossible to know.
I was just about to say, you're comparing him with all of the other drivers that haven't quite made it into Formula One?
Well, he was in Formula One, but haven't been able to stick around.
Yes.
That got booted out, you know, and you look at Hülkenberg, for example, who just keeps coming back.
Is that because he's a schmoozer?
Maybe. Mm. Great networking. I'm sure got a bit of money behind him as well.
Yeah.
But Buemi, it's so hard to know when these drivers leave F1 and become very successful outside of the sport
without getting another
what does
chance.
That mean
yeah
what does that mean because he's fantastic in endurance racing does that mean that his abilities and his skills suit a different kind of car, different kind of racing?
I remember speaking to someone that the maturity levels that are required for an endurance racer is someone that is that bit older than your sort of usual Formula One driver. And I was actually talking to the Corvette Le Mans drivers of the 2022 Le Mans, and they were talking about how these racers have gone from karting and single seat racing and evolved into a more mature driver, someone that needs that more long distance mentality to complete the race. And maybe he's just evolved into that mold a little bit more. Not to say that he would have been successful in Formula One if he had the ability or given the option to stay. It also shows how like the money side of Formula One can really manipulate the grid.
1,000,000%. And I think Yeah, I would disagree with you slightly because I think there's been lots of examples of young drivers performing very well, especially at Le Mans or in endurance. I get what you're saying. It's a valid point. And for sure, if racers are telling you that, then there's 100% truth in it. But I think it's more just mentality rather than age. I think it's just, I'm assuming, it's driver mentality and the ability to do a long distance race at speed compared to a Formula One race, which is obviously usually an hour and a half, an hour and three quarters. Different kind of mentality, different kind of racing style. And I think, yeah, it's so fascinating that someone could be so prolific outside of Formula One, but maybe theoretically wasn't giving enough within the sport. Mm. What would have happened if he'd stayed? If he was able to get a seat at another team and stick through his career, could he have reached the same kind of winning ways? We will never know, but I think there have definitely been examples of drivers who've performed better away from F1 than they have done it in F1. But also, it shows once again the caliber of Formula One drivers and how much the car matters.
Mm.
Because a lot of these other series, the car isn't as important. And Nyck de Vries is such a prime example of that, right? Did that amazing performance last year at Monza that we were like, God, this guy. Formula E world champion.
Yeah.
He missed his moment, but now he's going to get back in. This is great. He's given a dodgy AlphaTauri car and we haven't heard about him.
Yeah.
Literally, no one has spoken about him for the first three races of the year. He's quietly plodding away at the
just
back.
A great
so
filler.
Just, it's so harsh. So
at the moment.
So no, but it's just fascinating. So I thought it was a really, really, interesting point by old Jaime Alguersuari. So, blasts from the past out of the way.
Mm.
Let's move on to what we do actually have to look forward to, because at some point we are going to get a race.
Finally, I keep looking at my watch.
And then actually the racing thing is pretty thick and fast after that.
Yeah.
So we're going to be getting
Thank
right into
the
it.
The Lord.
Baku is coming, and you touched on it earlier. It has previously provided some pretty epic racing.
Yes.
Pretty chaotic racing.
Yeah. And with the new mentality of the FIA and their ability to throw out a red flag whenever they want, we might be in for quite a few restarts.
1,000,000%. But what we might also see, what we are going to see, is this new format for a sprint weekend.
Yeah, because I'm very familiar with the original format of the sprint weekend and love it.
You're a big fan of sprint weekends,
aren't you? Yeah,
you
not so much.
No, never really liked the sprint weekend. I'm a bit like a Max Verstappen in that sense. I was like, it just doesn't feel like the DNA of the sport. I don't feel like anything ever really happened. Like on lap one, sometimes there was a bit of overtaking, but everyone was very careful. And then after lap one, it was just 20 laps of boredom.
Yeah, so my argument is Friday afternoon, you finish work, head down to the pub, have a pint. Have a glass of water. Get back. Qualifying's on. It's not FP2. Qualifying starts on the Friday, and you've got an entire weekend starting on the Friday evening of Formula One action that actually means something for the entirety of the weekend. But you were explaining, because I had no idea, that there's even a more intricate format that's happening and taking place at Baku.
I believe they are trialing sprint race qualifying. So now on a Friday you get free practice one,
yeah,
and then Grand Prix qualifying.
So they don't get that long to figure out the car.
No, but that was normal. That's what we had before, right?
From
the sprint forward. So one practice session and then you're straight into qualifying for the race, and that locks in the grid for Sunday. Locked in, done.
So that's definitely adhering to some of the complaints that the drivers had on the previous sprint race weekends, that they were upset that the qualifying basically didn't matter for Sunday, and they were too scared to kind of fight for position in the sprint race, that then on Sunday, so nothing really made any sense.
Exactly, because on the Saturday now, you'll have another qualifying session, which will then set the grid for the sprint, which will then be its standalone event. So Saturday is essentially its own event with its own qualifying and its own race.
So it's, correct me if I'm wrong, a little bit like F2.
Yes.
Or a little bit more like F2.
A little bit more like F2. I think the inherent problem, which a few drivers have pointed out, is, okay, fine, that theoretically makes, there's more of an incentive to race on the Saturday, because if you do go backwards, you're not losing out on the main Grand Prix.
Because you've qualified on the Friday anyway.
Exactly. So it's all bonus points.
Yeah.
So it's all bonus points. So you, all you're doing is you're giving the drivers a chance to get more points. But there's still going to be caution to the wind, because if you wipe out the car on Saturday,
yeah,
you are giving your team a hectic job to rebuild before Sunday. And I don't understand the rules here, but let's say you do crash on Saturday and you need to replace a gearbox or you need to replace a part. Surely that's still going to give you the same penalty for the Grand Prix. Or do you see what I mean? Like, you're, how does that
yeah,
work?
Yeah, you're almost racing around at as close to 100% as possible to get maximum points, but at the same time kind of racing on eggshells.
Yeah, and like, you could see why a midfield driver would give it everything on the Saturday.
Mm.
You know, you could see why they'll fuel the driver super light in the morning, go really aggressive on the tire strategy just to try and get a Williams in P5 or yeah. a Haas on the podium or whatever. Mm. It makes sense. Because the top teams, theoretically, will be taking it a bit easier.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to think. But at the same time, well, then that's, I think then that's silly. Because then you're not really seeing proper racing. Because
yes. Yeah.
If you're Max Verstappen, you're just going to go, right, come on through then, Kevin Magnussen. I'm not going to fight you because I don't want the risk. So.
And on the Sunday, I'll beat you anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've focused a little bit, in my opinion, they've focused a little bit too much on how can they make Saturday become more meaningful for the teams and drivers without actually thinking about this cost cap thing. Because I remember in Saudi, there were teams that basically, if they were having crashes in practice, they weren't being able to rebuild them properly to be able to actually compete on the Saturday and Sunday. So does that mean now that because of the cost cap, because they have to spend within their means, they're not going to be able to bring as many parts as possible to the race weekend, meaning that if you're going wheel to wheel with someone on the Saturday, are you still going to go for that gap and try and barge someone out of the way? It's a big risk.
It's still a big risk, which then... So then you go, right, well, what's the solution? Okay, any damage, repairs, anything like that, don't incur penalties for the Sunday. So that Saturday is its own event. So if you have to replace a gearbox or an engine, you can do so.
Might as well just bring a second car.
Well, so that's what I was going to get onto.
Oh, sorry.
because the problem with that, eradicate the penalties, is then you'll get teams being very clever and going, oh, engine's not working, just put a fresh engine in for Sunday.
Yeah.
Easy peasy. And also, yeah, that's the thing. So you then go, right, let's just bring back the old T car, the old spare car. Yeah. But then the costs are going insane. Yeah. So
I've got a solution. Put my hand up.
Go on.
Go-karts on Saturday.
Don't be stupid. fundamentally, Formula One are trying to do what you love, which is create action and excitement all 3 days.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to milk the cash cow a little too much.
Yeah.
What other sporting events around the world are 3 days of action?
Yeah.
It will increase ticket prices.
Four.
Yeah. they're trying to increase ticket prices. They're trying to increase sales. They're trying to increase TV revenue, everything, so that we all have to watch and consume more and be around for more. Whereas I think scrap Friday, have FP1 on a Saturday morning, qualifying on a Saturday afternoon, race on a Sunday. Bish, bash, bosh. Compact it. But Formula One are going to do that because they're losing a day of ticket sales, of TV revenue, everything. So that's the problem that we've got. Formula One aren't going to give up on this. They're wanting to make cash. But like Verstappen said, and like I agree, it feels a little bit half pointless, half non-Formula One, half a bit gimmicky.
Yeah. So if you were having to keep a sprint of some form, it's difficult to say because we've not seen this new format. But do you think the previous format made more sense than this one? Because just talking about it, because this is really the first time that we've talked about it, it seems as though they've taken one step forward, two steps back in terms of action and making the drivers actually race for something, which is going to be interesting. Because the other mentality, the other point that I was thinking of whilst you were talking about it is, what does that mentality bring to the driver in terms of qualifying? Because they all talk about how hyped up they get as drivers for qualifying, especially at street circuits. Baku being one of them, Monaco, we all know how important the qualifying is. So it's almost more important to channel all of your energy into that one qualifying session. Now there's two. What does that mean for the driver in terms of just their pure mentality of going into that qualifying on the Saturday as opposed to having the qualifying on the Friday as well? It just kind of defeats the point of putting your all into that one session that gives you that one result at the end of the race weekend. Why am I now talking myself out of loving the sprint race weekend?
No, I think the new format is better.
Okay.
I think the new format is a better idea, but wrought with problems, because I still don't think it's going to solve the lack of action in the sprint race. I think what's going to be fascinating is the drivers, if they're giving 100% to qualifying on a Friday afternoon, because that's the race grid, on Saturday morning, are they as motivated? Can they deliver again at 100%? Yeah. Will we see a different grid? 100%. Will we see some surprises? Mm-hmm. Absolutely guaranteed. Because I think, as I say, I don't know the actual format for the Saturday morning. I'm assuming it's the same knockout format. That would be clever if they changed the actual format. Yeah,
just do like a 20-minute run.
Let's have a look at that. Or if it's like a one-shot wonder.
Because F2, they just do 20 minutes qualifying, don't they? Sprint. And they're all out on track at the same time.
Why can I not type Baku sprint qualifying?
I reckon that's it. It's going to be quite hard to find and sift through.
Sprint qualifying, single lap Q3 planned amid new format for Baku.
Not that difficult to find.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're basically, everyone's in Q3.
No. I think it follows the same format and then it's single lap. So here we go. The new format. The next Grand Prix of the Formula One World Championship scheduled for Baku will include the first sprint race. For this occasion, a program is underway to change the format of the weekend. Friday would feature the usual first free practice, second being cancelled and replaced with qualifying. This, moreover, will establish the starting grid for Sunday, with another qualifying session for the sprint race being held on Saturday morning. How the sprint qualifying takes place. The new qualifying session, according to what is emerging while awaiting for official decision, foresees the performance of three phases currently present in the battle for pole position, Q1, Q2, and Q3. Unlike all of these, unlike the traditional weekends, however, will take place with shorter timings, to the point that a specific plan is being discussed only for Q3, which is the decisive one. So one lap, Q3.
Okay, but that still is only the top 10 drivers.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've got another plan.
Go on.
Not go-karts.
Oh, don't start.
Saturday.
No, I don't want to know.
Should be the team reserve drivers racing.
Oh yes, sick, amazing. No, that should be Friday. Stick with the current format. Do if you're going to do...
What, so the reserve drivers qualify for the...
No. Just do a separate... If you want action, don't do it on a Saturday. The weekend's got to ramp up. You don't do practice and qualifying on a Friday and then you've got reserve drivers in on a Saturday before the main race. Instead, I think that's actually a genius idea, is on the Friday, or go back to Sunday pre-race. Get the reserve or the young drivers in. It's the young driver race. Still counts towards the Constructors' Championship.
Well, young drivers would be just F2. That's literally F2.
Yeah, but most of the reserve drivers are F2. Yeah. Stick a load of F2 drivers in a Formula One car, let them go race. Fucking mega. Yeah. Sounds outrageous. Yeah, look, I'm not bitter and old enough to be completely against change. I get it. Formula One's got to move around. But I just think we're not getting really anywhere yet on paper, because I think Saturday afternoon could still be a bit casual, but let's wait and see. Mm. I'm very keen to be proven wrong. And because it's the first of a new format, it will be chaotic.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like they haven't quite agreed the qualifying format yet, at least from what I could research. And people are going to be trying stuff and it's Baku. So we can only keep our fingers crossed.
Oh yes.
I still want to fly the flag there for my alternative Monaco Grand Prix.
Go on.
Which is...
Go-karts.
No. Average qualifying.
Okay.
So like the Indy 500.
Yeah.
It's two sessions.
Average top speed.
No, yeah, basically. Where you've got to do three qualifying laps and it's the average of those three laps. Yeah,
that's cool.
So you get so each driver goes out for five laps, out lap, then three laps, and then in lap. And those three laps, you get the average time. And it's kind of like that throughout the day. So you can see who can maintain the highest speed on average with that focus and that concentration. And it just whittles down. You could have, you know, Saturday is qualifying. And then on the Sunday, you get the top 10 drivers do it. And maybe it's an average of 10 laps.
Or whatever.
Anyway, That brings an end to the latest episode of After Chicken Flag, this weird lull that we've got. We will be back shortly after Baku, I guess. I need to check the diary, but we'll be back very soon. We're going to be around the world somewhere, I think.
I'm just double checking.
I think it is just after Baku.
It is, yeah. So we're jumping in pretty much 24 hours after Baku.
How exciting. We'll be discussing all of the action. So if you want to watch us and see what crazy F1 merch Paul and I wear in the next episode.
Oh, well, I'm going to go shopping right now.
Head over to recast.tv/behindtheglass and you can book your place for live streams that Tony and I do for the main episode or get access to the video content. Otherwise, sit back and relax and you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever podcast player you like to use. And our next episode will be going live in a few weeks post Baku. If you want to follow Paul in the meantime, he's at WallagePJW on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass. We'll catch up with you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
After the checkered flag.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.